Today on Enduring Word with David Guzik, pastor of Calvary Chapel, Santa Barbara.
The pagan demon Molech was worshipped by heating a metal statue representing the god until it was red hot, and then by placing a living infant on the outstretched hands of the statue while beating drums drowned out the screams of the child while it burned to death. This man Ahaz put his own son upon the burning hot hands of Molech.
The demonic god Molech was worshipped in Israel. This depraved form of worship was promoted by many of Israel's kings and was thoroughly condemned by God. In today's study, Pastor David leads us through the reigns of several kings. Many of them murdered their own children by offering them to this false god. This kind of extreme fanaticism is the result of turning one's back on the true and living God. We may not sacrifice babies on a fiery altar, but aren't thousands sacrificed every day on the altar of convenience? Now, here's Pastor David with today's edition of Enduring Word.
Pekah, the son of Remaliah, became king over Israel in Samaria and reigned 20 years. And he did evil in the sight of the Lord, and he did not depart from the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, there's our chorus again, repeating all the time, who had made Israel sin. In the days of Pekah, king of Israel, Tiglath-Pileser, king of Assyria, came and took Eion, Abel-Beth-Maacha, Genoa, Kadesh, Hazor, Gilead, and Galilee, all the land of Naphtali, and he carried them captive to Assyria. Do you understand what just God said there? You see, the northern kingdom of Israel was essentially a client kingdom of the Assyrian Empire, you know, a tributary kingdom, a subject kingdom. But now the king of Assyria didn't even like that. He said, well, you know, I like this piece of land around Galilee. Let's just come and take a great big chunk of it. And that's what he did. Now, continuing on, it says, then Hoshea, the son of Elah, led a conspiracy against Pekah, the son of Remaliah, and struck and killed him. So he reigned in his place in the 20th year of Jotham, the son of Uzziah. Now the rest of the acts of Pekah and all that he did, indeed, they are written in the book of the Chronicles of the kings of Israel. You know, we read about king after king after king ruling over this northern kingdom. It's sort of like a revolving door, right? They come and go, they come and go. There's no common thread between them. Different kings, different dynasties. But you know the one common thread between them all? It says, and they did evil in the sight of the Lord. You know, it was not one consistent dynasty. Like in the southern kingdom of Judah, you had the dynasty of David. It was the throne of David. It was all of his descendants. But dynasties came and go in the northern kingdom. If there was any one common dynasty that reigned in the northern kingdom, it was the dynasty of evil. It was the dynasty of rebellion against God. Each was evil and each continued in the state-sponsored idolatry in Israel. And so, it was so bad that eventually Tiglath-Pileser, the king of Assyria, came and took. This Assyrian king, unlike in the days of Menahem, would not be paid off by the king of Israel. He came and took some of the best land of the kingdom of Israel, including much of the northern part of the kingdom. And so these were very dark days for Israel. The territory of this northern kingdom was now reduced to a tiny kingdom, only about 30 miles wide by about 40 miles long. It was a very, very small place. And it says, in fact, that he even carried them captive to Assyria, if you notice that. You see, this was the official state policy of the Assyrian Empire. When they conquered a land, if it was necessary, they relocated by force the best and the brightest of the conquered nation and brought them to Assyria. This practice is going to be repeated a few times regarding the northern kingdom of Israel, but it will also be exercised by the Babylonians regarding the southern kingdom of Judah. Now, let me just say one thing here. If you have the empire of Assyria exercising such violent influence upon the northern kingdom of Israel, you can imagine what it's like in the southern kingdom of Judah at this time, right? It's a frightening time. You have a mighty empire conquering the kingdom right above you, your brothers. And you're wondering, what will happen to us? So this was a time of great fear and great need to trust in the Lord for the southern kingdom of Judah. Well, in any regard, it says that Pekah's reign didn't last long. We're told that Hoshea, the son of Elah, led a conspiracy against Pekah, the son of Remaliah, and struck and killed him. And this was another king and another dynasty to end with assassination. This, again, is a powerful demonstration of the great instability in the northern kingdom. Well, do you see how it was here, just king after king? What did we have, five quick kings of Israel here? We had a Zechariah, we had Shalom, we had Menahem, we had Pekahiah, and we had Pekah over and over again, just sort of the revolving door of evil in the northern kingdom of Israel. Striking. But as you notice, as these wicked kings continue, and the blessing of God is not strong in the northern kingdom, they lose more of their land, more of their security, more of their stability, more of their blessing. Eventually, in not a very long time after the reign of Pekah, they will be reduced to nothing. The northern kingdom will be totally gone, conquered by the Assyrians, but we'll get into that in our next study. Now, the camera in verse 32 turns back to the southern kingdom of Judah, where we're concerned about the son of Uzziah, the son of Azariah. Pretty tough when your father has a 52-year reign that ends with such tragedy, right? It ended with this great tragedy of the leprosy and the dying and the isolated house. But look what happened here beginning at verse 32. We read, "In the second year of Pekah, the son of Remaliah, king of Israel, Jotham, the son of Uzziah, king of Judah, began to reign. He was 25 years old when he became king, and he reigned 16 years in Jerusalem. His mother's name was Jerusha, the daughter of Zadok. And he did what was right in the sight of the Lord. He did according to all that his father Uzziah had done. However, the high places were not removed, and the people still sacrificed and burned incense on the high places. He built the upper gate of the house of the Lord. Now the rest of the acts of Jotham and all that he did, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the Kings of Judah?" Well, isn't it refreshing after reading about this revolving door of evil in the northern kingdom, we finally have to come back down to the southern kingdom to get a king that's godly. He stands in stark contrast to the evil done by the previously mentioned kings of Israel. And among the kings of Judah, at least, some of them were good and godly kings. And this man did according to all that his father Uzziah had done. I want you to notice something, though. You see a familiar pattern here manifested both in the kingdom of Israel and in the kingdom of Judah, where the sons reigned as the fathers before them. Well, it certainly wasn't concretely predetermined. It wasn't like, well, if you had a wicked father, you'd have a wicked son. Sometimes there were exceptions to this, right? Sometimes you had a godly king who had a wicked son, and sometimes you had a wicked king who had a godly son. But many times you find that the godly king had a godly son and the wicked king had a wicked son. It shows us the great influence that a father has upon the son. It shows us the great influence that one generation has upon the other generation. And it was manifested in the days of Jotham in that he had rebuilt the upper gate of the house of the Lord. And that's mentioned there in verse 35, where it says, "He built the upper gate of the house of the Lord." Again, a positive sign in Judah. When these kings were concerned about the house of the Lord, it reflected some measure of spiritual revival. I want you to notice something here in Jotham. In particular, when it says that he built the upper gate of the house of the Lord, when you start getting into what that really means, both in archaeology and in the original Hebrew, it seems that Jotham rebuilt a link between the temple and the palace. In other words, he wanted to have free access from his own house to the house of the Lord. And isn't that a positive sign? He's building something that will link and make a better connection between the royal house and the temple of the Lord. It's almost as if he said, "I want to be more regular at the temple. I want to worship at the temple more. I want to be around there more. I am going to strengthen the link between the temple and the palace." Now, his father Azariah, or Uzziah, misunderstood the link between the royal house and the house of God, right? He wanted an improper link. But many kings before him wanted no link between the house of the king and the house of God. Here it seems that Jotham had the right idea. a proper link where the temple didn't belong to the king, but there was a firm link between the two so that the king could participate in what was going on at the temple in an appropriate way, not in an inappropriate way. You know, you have to say, we don't read a lot about Jotham here, right? But Jotham is one of the only Hebrew kings from Saul all the way down against whom God has nothing to record in a negative way, except that he didn't remove the high places. Other than that, there's nothing negative about him. So, remarkable. A good king, often underrated. Nevertheless, God will chasten them for their partial disobedience. Look at it here, starting at verse 37. In those days, the Lord began to send Rezin, king of Syria, and Pekah, the son of Remaliah, against Judah. So Jotham rested with his fathers and was buried with his fathers in the city of David, his father. Then Ahaz, his son, reigned in his place. You see, under the inspiration of the Holy Spirit, the writer of 2 Kings tells us that it was the hand of the Lord that sent these foreign leaders against the troubled kingdom of Judah, or the kingdom of Judah that was troubled by these foreign leaders. It says that the Lord began to send them. This was only the beginning. If Judah and her kings responded to these chastening events in the right way, God would take note. But if they hardened their hearts and rejected the correction of God, he would take note of that as well. I think what God was saying is his heart was rejoicing over the general obedience in the days of Uzziah, over the general obedience in the days of Jotham. But he said, not everything is right, and so I'm going to chasten you so you get even more right with me and you draw even closer to me. Listen, do you sometimes look at this and think it's unfair? We might say, God, why are you judging Judah so strictly when you seem to be so easy on the northern kingdom of Israel? And God would say, because Judah knows me better. Because they're more accountable. Because as this enduring principle, judgment begins at the house of God. And so he was chastening them, and everything would depend on how they responded to this chastening. Well, how did they respond? Actually, King Ahaz is not a very encouraging response as we begin here into chapter 16. In the 17th year of Pekah, the son of Remaliah, Ahaz, the son of Jotham, king of Judah, began to reign. Ahaz was 20 years old when he became king, and he reigned 16 years in Jerusalem, and he did not do what was right in the sight of the Lord his God, as his father David had done. Now, we had had a pretty good run of good kings, hadn't we, in the southern kingdom of Judah? But now, boom, here with this man Ahaz, we have a man who was more like the northern kings of Israel than the southern dynasty of Judah. It briefly describes for us the reign of what I would think is perhaps the worst king of Judah, this man Ahaz. Whereas many of the previous kings fell short in one area or another. What was the common area that we see many of these kings failing in? It says, well, they still allowed the sacrifice and the incense to be burnt on the high places. You know, well, the good reign, but he wasn't fully obedient in this area or that. But instead of Ahaz, it simply said he did not do what was right in the sight of the Lord. And it says, he did not do as was right in the sight of the Lord, as his father David had done. Let me remind you, Ahaz had plenty of good examples. His own father was a good example for him, right? His grandfather, Uzziah, was a good example for him. Historically, David was a good example for him. Ahaz rejected these godly examples, and he walked in his own way. So look at it here, verse 3. You're going to be shocked by this idolatry. But he walked in the way of the kings of Israel. Indeed, he made his son pass through the fire, according to the abominations of the nations whom the Lord had cast out from before the children of Israel. And he sacrificed and burned incense on the high places, on the hills, and under every green tree. Ahaz not only rejected the godly heritage of David, he embraced the ungodly ways of the kings of the northern kingdom of Israel. You see, the southern kingdom of Judah had a mixture of godly and ungodly kings. The northern kingdom of Judah had only ungodly kings, and Ahaz followed their pattern. You know, this is the first instance that we find where it's specifically said in the books of the kings where Judah imitated Israel's apostasy. If you want to see a good description of the apostasy of this time, you could turn to Micah chapter 7, verses 2 through 7, where it describes just the great abominations that took place during this time. We don't have time for it this evening, but you can just see in these very gripping, deep passages from the minor prophets, you see some of the wickedness that went on in this time. But the text tells us itself right here in verses 3 and 4 that he was so bad, as it says here, that he made his son pass through the fire in verse 3. Do you understand what that describes? This describes Ahaz's participation in the worship of Molech, the pagan god, or perhaps it would be more accurate to describe him as a demon, because that's what he was. The pagan demon Molech was worshipped by heating a metal statue representing the god until it was red hot, and then by placing a living infant on the outstretched hands of the statue while beating drums drowned out the screams of the child while it burned to death. This man Ahaz put his own son upon the burning hot hands of Molech. Let me tell you something. In Leviticus chapter 20, God pronounced a death sentence against all who worship Molech. This is what it says in Leviticus 20. He says, I will set my face against that man and will cut him off from among his people because he has given some of his descendants to Molech to defile my sanctuary and to profane my holy name. I have to say that it's very sad to say that even a man as great as Solomon was associated with Molech worship and built a temple to this idol. And one of the great crimes of the northern tribes of Israel was their worship of Molech, and it led to the Assyrian captivity that we're going to read about the next time we come together in 2 Kings chapter 17. And we're going to see even future examples of this Molech worship among the tribes that made up the southern kingdom of Judah. Therefore, look at the idea here as it continues on in these verses. It says, according to the abominations of the nations whom the Lord had cast out from before the children of Israel. You see, the Canaanite nations that occupied Canaan before the time of Joshua also practiced this terrible form of human sacrifice and child sacrifice. And what did God do to those Canaanite nations? He judged them and he cast them out. Now, what will he do to the tribes of the northern kingdom of Israel and the southern kingdom of Judah if they continue in those same Canaanite sins? He will cast them out as well. By the way, this reminds us of something that maybe I should just throw out as a reminder. It reminds us that the war against the Canaanites in the book of Joshua, as terrible and as complete as it was, and let me be honest with you, the warfare described in the book of Joshua is terrible. They were commanded to go in there and to destroy entire cities, men, women, children, and even animals. As terrible as those wars against the Canaanites were, they were not racial wars. God's judgment did not come upon the Canaanites through the armies of Israel because of their race, but because of their sin. And if Israel harbored the same sin, they would face the same judgment. So please understand that. There were terrible wars of judgment that God uniquely commanded the kingdom of Israel to carry out against those Canaanite peoples. But nobody should think for a moment that those were racial wars. Those were wars not against race, but against sin. And if Israel practiced the same sin, they would face a similar judgment. Going on now to verse 5. It says, then Rezin, king of Syria, and Pekah, son of Remaliah, king of Israel, came up to Jerusalem to make war. And they besieged Ahaz, but could not overcome him. At that time, Rezin, king of Syria, captured Eloth for Syria and drove the men of Judah from Eloth. Then the Edomites went to Eloth and dwelt there to this day. So this was part of Pekah's anti-Assyrian policy in the northern kingdom of Israel. He thought that if he could defeat Judah, Syria and Israel together could make an effective stand against the growing power of the Assyrian Empire. Now, you and I have already read that that didn't work, right? That the Assyrian Empire just kept gathering strength. But before he was defeated in this, that's what this king of Israel thought. And what they wanted to do was they wanted to dethrone Ahaz, and they wanted to set up a Syrian king over Judah, a certain man called the son of Tabeel. It's described for us in Isaiah chapter 7. Matter of fact, it's very interesting to study 2 Chronicles chapter 28 because it tells us some of the terrible losses that Judah endured when the Syrians and the people of Israel came down from the south and attacked the southern kingdom of Judah. They suffered terrible losses from this attack. King Ahaz lost 120,000 Judean soldiers and 200,000 civilian hostages in these battles with Israel and Syria. That's in 2 Chronicles chapter 28, verses 5 through 8. It was a very dark time for Judah. It even looked like the dynasty of David would soon be extinguished, as so many dynasties in the northern kingdom of Israel had been ended. And so God had his hand in it all. Nevertheless, as it says right there in verse 5, they besieged Ahaz but could not overcome him. You see, the combined armies of Syria and Israel were strong enough to capture many of the cities of Judah, but they were not strong enough to defeat Jerusalem and overthrow the government of Ahaz, as wicked as it was. Why did God still protect the government of Ahaz? Because as wicked as this man was, he was the dynasty of David. And God had swore to David that he would have a special blessing on his dynasty. And in fact, who would eventually come forth from the dynasty of David? The Messiah himself. This dynasty has to be preserved at least until the Messiah comes. And so it's very interesting in this historical context. I told you that Isaiah chapter 7 fills in some of the details of the time. Do you know that very famous passage in Isaiah chapter 7 where it speaks of Emmanuel and the coming person? It's just used in the announcement of this very time. The Emmanuel sign came from Isaiah to King Ahaz during this joint Israeli-Syrian invasion. And as the following verses reveal, Ahaz refused to trust in the Lord, and instead he put his trust in the king of Assyria. Yet for the sake of David, God would not allow this disastrous attack upon Judah to prevail. He would not allow this satanic plot against the messianic dynasty of David to succeed. You see, Isaiah had a message to Ahaz. He assured the wicked king, who, by the way, didn't really even listen to this. He assured him that there would be a remnant left to return to the land, and that a virgin would bear a son, and so there would not fail to be a king upon the throne of David. The dynasty could never be destroyed because of Emmanuel's kingdom. There would be no end. That was Isaiah's word to King Ahaz in this context. Well, in the midst of all this trouble, look at who Ahaz trusts, starting now at verse 7. So Ahaz sent messengers to Tiglath-Pileser, king of Assyria, saying, "I am your servant and your son. Come up and save me from the hand of the king of Syria and from the hand of the king of Israel, who rise up against me." You know, you can hardly read those words without spitting them in your mouth, right? How does it feel to hear a king of Judah, a descendant of David, say to the evil king of the empire of Assyria, "I am your servant and your son"? Now, I want you to know something. Before Ahaz did this, Isaiah offered him a sign for assurance in God's help in the struggle against the combined armies of Israel and Syria. Do you know what the promise was? The sign for assurance was that a virgin would bear. And it happened, and then eventually had its eventual glorious fulfillment in the birth of Jesus Christ.
There's much more Pastor David would like to share with you, but we've run out of time for today. This has been another edition of Enduring Word, the radio ministry of David Guzik, pastor of Calvary Chapel in Santa Barbara, California. Pastor David will continue teaching verse by verse through the books of 1st and 2nd Kings next time. You can order today's message for free by emailing us at radio@enduringword.com. Again, that email address is radio@enduringword.com. Sometimes it is just easier to call. Our phone number is 805-730-1400. We'll be happy to help you. Again, that number to call is 805-730-1400. You can learn more about Enduring Word and Pastor David at our website, enduringword.com. All of Pastor David's messages through the Bible are available to listen to or download for free at enduringword.com. Again, that's enduringword.com. Simply click on the radio option in the main menu. Of course, for many of us, Enduring Word commentaries have been a part of our daily discipleship. We'd like to encourage you to consider supporting Enduring Word by partnering with us with a one-time gift or monthly donation. Your support helps this program and Pastor David's commentaries extend their reach worldwide. Well, that's all the time we have for today. From all of the production team here at Enduring Word, we want to say thank you for tuning in. Next time, Pastor David will continue teaching through the books of 1 and 2 Kings. That's next time on Enduring Word.